Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. And you guys know, Thursdays, I love to go a little bit more inspirational. And today we have a special guest, Naftali Hoff. Thank you so much for being with us today. Naftali, I saw all your stuff. And, you know, guys, I would just want to tell you that Naftali is a super coach when it comes to professionals. And Naftali, give us just, you know, an intro of like a 2-minute elevator pitch of what you guys do.
Absolutely. So thank you, Ishai. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm very excited for this conversation. I think, you know, we had our little back conversation prior to recording and we share some experience and education. So I'm a former educator and specifically school leader. About 8 years ago, I transitioned out of formal school leadership into coaching and consulting. And so I focus on leaders, both educational and nonprofit, but as well, many, many business owners, entrepreneurs, and leaders to help them maximize their impact. And specifically, we focus on things like time management, productivity, delegation, really understanding people, understanding how we can leverage our capacity as leaders to get the most from ourselves and from everyone that we touch every single day in the work that we do.
So first of all, it sounds very exciting, but you know, before we're going to dig into exactly what you do and how you can help other people achieve the, you know, the best that they can achieve. And this is all what we are about today. That's what we're going to do. We're going to help everyone who's listening to achieve their very best with everything that we've mentioned right now. I want to go back to your own story. Who is Naftali? How you started with education? What brought you to this part of the business of coaching?
Sure. So, well, education is its own story. The connection to coaching, I think, is very natural. And I guess I'll get to that in a minute. I'm a former yeshiva student, grew up Orthodox Jewish. And so it's not uncommon for the next step after years of Talmudic and other studies, biblical studies and whatnot, to move from student to teacher. It's a pretty common pathway. And so it was the natural next step. I had just married my wife. She's from Chicago. We were living there. I was in a, I guess you'd say, post-Talmudic intensive study program called a kollel, which is common for people who get married and then continue in their studies. And an opportunity presented itself. It happened to be a great opportunity for me because I had anyway, at that point, almost completed my graduate level degree in education. That was the track I was planning. And I had an opportunity at one of the local schools to begin teaching. So I started teaching there. I was there ultimately for, I think it was 12 years. Concurrent to that, I began to take on some part-time administrative responsibilities and eventually became a principal of the, what we call the General Studies or the Secular Studies program of one of the local yeshivot, one of the local day schools. And that propelled me to my next step, which was to become head of school. So it was in that process, and not only was I trying to understand and deliver high quality education, but I was also trying to understand leadership. You know, when you teach, you're not just teaching to robots, you're teaching to people. And you want those people to not only learn the information that you're providing, but you also want them to be inspired by it. Because religious studies is not just information, it's a way of life. So it's all about connecting deeply with people. It's about understanding what's going to motivate them, what's going to get them to embrace and connect with things on a much deeper level. And that began a process that allowed me, if I can inspire students, then no reason I couldn't inspire adults as well. And in that process, I began to not only carry out leadership responsibilities every single day, but also to think and contemplate, understand motivation, understand engagement, understand communication. A lot of the soft skills, Ishai, that I think oftentimes get lost because so often we think, well, if I just know the technical side of what I do, I'm going to be successful, right? But that's really not the case. For the most part, the leaders are no longer the doers. The leaders are the ones who are finding others who are doing the primary work And the leaders are creating the framework, the vision, the strategy, and the goals that help those individuals become successful. Because if we try to do all the work ourselves, we're not going to get very far. But if we could find other people and leverage their abilities, automate it, whatever it might be, to create next level performance and productivity, then our leadership can scale and our businesses can scale. So when I was looking for my next path, I kind of hit up against a bit of a dead end or a wall, which oftentimes happens in school leadership. I decided that instead of doing more of the same, I would create an opportunity for myself to impact others on a much broader scale. So instead of working in one building, one institution all the time and kind of devoting my life to them or to that, I wanted to impact so many others by making a difference on the leadership level specifically, because we know that if you impact the leader, if you help the leader grow, everybody else benefits. You know, so when I did my dissertation, which focused on what it is that school leaders do that most motivate teachers to perform at their highest levels, the research is very clear that either level one or level 1A, as far as student academic performance is concerned, I'm not talking about, you know, culture, I'm not talking about motivation, I'm not talking about general happiness or connection to an institution, I'm talking about actual performance in the classroom. The single greatest impact, or perhaps the second, depending on which research you subscribe to, is performance of academic leadership. Meaning if principals are doing their jobs well, and there's a list of things they need to be doing, but if they're doing those things well, there's a very high correlation on how students actually perform in the classroom. And the same is true for business, right? If a leader is doing what he or she needs to be doing every single day, people around them are going to perform better. So I was very interested in that whole process. I felt that coaching was the natural outgrowth of education. Even though it's not about teaching, it's about asking, right? It's about, you know, achieving clarity about what needs to happen. It's awareness. I call it the two A's, awareness and accountability. So what needs to be done to help my business grow, for example, and what am I going to make myself accountable to? What goals will I set? And will there be accountability on the back end of those goals to make sure that they're happening, right? We could commit to whatever we want, but unless we take action, it's not going to drive results. So that's really what the coaching process has been for me. And the mastermind groups, which I've started to run since last year, are all about the same thing, except for instead of being one-to-one with me as a coach, it's one-to-many with me as a facilitator. But the same idea of people supporting one another, helping them solve their stickiest problems, and then providing accountability with reporting, with constant sharing of goals. The more we hold ourselves accountable, the more successful we will be.
Tell me something. Is there any one specific that you can point out at that gave you that inspiration to become, meaning to move that, to make that move?
From education to coaching?
Yes.
Yes. I felt that, first of all, I wanted to become my own boss. I was frustrated and a little bit burnt out, to be honest, with the way that the lay leadership in particular had, it wasn't about crimping my style, but it was about not being in lockstep and ultimately, in my mind, making things more difficult for me to do my very best work. You know, when you go into education, for example, or anything you do, if you have a passion for it, which I certainly did and continue to have, you want to do what lights you up, right? But not every part of school leadership is that for most people, right? What lights me up as a school leader? It's delivering, an engaging message to students. It's providing teachers with the very best tools to succeed. It's visiting classrooms. It's not, you know, reviewing 1,000 report cards. It's not making sure that our budget is balanced. It's not chasing after donors. They're things that I love. They're things that I needed to do in order for my job to work. But I wanted to do more of what I loved and less of what I didn't love. Now, it doesn't mean that in coaching, I don't have to do things I don't love, right? I still have to build a business. That was hard for me, right? I didn't have a business person's mindset. I had to develop that. I thought I could just hang a shingle and have a coaching business. Not so fast, right? You got to do a lot of things in order to be successful. But at the same time, the work that I do day by day is much more purposeful. That's number one. And number two, like I said before, I wanted to scale my impact. And I felt the only way to do that was to be in a position where I'm not tethered to a single institution. So if I'm providing leadership resources for school leaders, for business owners, for entrepreneurs, I need to be in a coaching relationship with them. Also training and professional development and seminars and a lot of things that I offer, they're all coming from the same core concept of giving what I know, inspiring people, but it's just from a different angle and working at a different level, so to speak, within the institutional pyramid to have that impact.
You know what? I love what you said before, and you pointed out that you can help principals, you can have head of schools, et cetera, because what they will do will project on their staff and their students, et cetera. This is exactly the same, just like the entrepreneur, the CEO, the owner on a business.
Without question.
Yeah, and that's beautiful. Can you share some key strategies out of your wisdom and everything, all your strategies that you actually work on when you go and coach with us, so we can get a little better idea of how to have a better life as professional people?
Okay, so just to clarify, when you say strategies, you mean things I will typically work with my clients on?
Yes.
For example?
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the biggest issues, Yishai, that people struggle with is time management and productivity. Right? We have more tools than ever, but we're more inundated at the same time. There are greater expectations of our availability. There's more work that we will take on. And there's this assumption that somehow we can manage it all. And when people come to me, for the most part, they are stressed out. They are overwhelmed. Their to-do lists continue to grow. And they feel like they can never get ahead of their demands. And more importantly, figure out what are the priorities and finish it in a way where they can go home comfortably to their loved ones at the end of the day, carve out me time and we time so that they can live a life of purpose, right? In other words, you go to work every day, that's lighting you up, hopefully, not necessarily so. We know engagement levels are nowhere near where they need to be, certainly not for people, the rank and file for those within companies. And that's another way that I help business leaders to think about how they can add and infuse impact and value and purpose into the work that everybody is doing. So everybody's more motivated and engaged to do that work. But coming back to the primary point, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. So we talk about prioritization. We talk about the most important tasks. What are the things that you must do, that your business needs, that your school, your whatever needs for you to be you, the collective you, to be successful? And how do we then move away from you and take off of your plate everything else? So if you're thinking about it, for example, from the perspective of the Eisenhower matrix, we're all familiar with the urgent and important, right? What's critical, what must get done right now? For example, I've got a deadline. So it's urgent and important because the issue is important and the timetable is very tight. For the most part, leaders should be operating what's called quadrant two, which is not urgent and important. So it's strategic thinking, it's setting goals, it's helping to imagine the players on the team and putting them in best position for success. It's building relationships. They're not urgent, but they are of great importance. And those are the things that leaders need to do to help the business grow. Quadrant three is where the delegation can occur. And that's where the items tend to be more urgent in nature, but not of high importance. And that can often be delegated to somebody else. So many refer to these quadrants as the four D's. So it's do, which is urgent and important. Do that right now. Get it out of the way. Brian Tracy might call it eating your frog, right? Others might have different terms for it.
I love Brian
Tracy.
Get
it out of the
way. Great.
Yeah, get it out of the way at the beginning. Knock it off so that you can focus on what's most important afterwards. Quadrant two is known as defer, which I don't love because defer sounds like you're sort of pushing it away. It doesn't really mean that. It just means it's not as urgent, but definitely you want to attend to it. Quadrant three is delegate. And that's, again, where you're finding others who can take things away from your plate so you could focus on the most important tasks. And then four is not urgent, not important, that's delete. Just get rid of it completely. Don't even pay attention to it. We have a lot of distractors. You know, Nir Eyal, who wrote the book Indistractable, was a guest on my podcast. So we talk about, he talked about, you know, how does a person become less distracted? Our phones can be tremendously distracting. We have all sorts of things that are pinging us day and night. So we have to figure out, how do I figure out what's most important? And then one thing I work with leaders on, I think it's seriously important, not to make a to-do list, though you could have one, but the to-do list shouldn't drive your work. It's blocking your calendar. It's scheduling the things that need to get done and doing so in a way that will motivate you to do it within a tighter window than you might comfortably be prepared to set aside. So for example, if you think a task is going to take, I don't know, an hour, you block out 45 minutes to an hour. So keeping in mind, by the way, you might need a little bit of extra time. So I'd add a little bit of a space between that and the next task, because we do know that sometimes we're bad at estimating how much time a task will take. On the other hand, you have Parkinson's law, which says that tasks will take the amount of time allocated to them. So if I give myself an hour, if I give myself 3 hours, the same task could take 1 hour or 3 hours, depending on the mindset I go into the task with. So using our time effectively, blocking out everything else and saying, for this 30 minutes, for these 60 minutes, I'm going to do X. And I'm going to do that to the exclusion of everything else. I power down my phone. I'll tell my secretary I'm not available. Whatever that means for you. So nobody could schedule over it. And now my time is blocked out. The same way my time is blocked out for you right now. I'm not taking phone calls. I'm not responding to anybody. I've set my phone to do not disturb. I'm locked into our conversation. And of course, it's a lot easier because you are sort of an accountability partner for me right now. But you can set that for yourself too. You can have somebody in your office that is going to ask you an hour after you've set this time, did you complete your task? You could ask them to do that. That creates a level of accountability. But it has to be accountability from somebody who you respect and actually, quote, answer to. If it's somebody you're going to blow off, it's not going to be valuable to you. But holding accountability to whatever you say you're going to do is going to be very empowering, because it forces you to lock in when otherwise you might cut yourself some slack. And we're notorious for doing that, right? We'll let ourselves go if nobody else is holding us accountable. And if we're the boss, who really will hold us accountable? Except for our customers, our bottom line, maybe our board of directors, depending on who we answer to. But in the moment, most of our direct reports won't hold us accountable unless we empower them to do so.
Naftali, I want to do something. I love what you said now. I love the four quadrants. I love your system. Let's do something. Let's go a little bit wild. If you could help us, because I'm sure you have the experience, you know, helping all these people. If you could give us like sort of a fake example. Let's say comes to you an executive. He's running a company and he has X amount of stuff in the schedule. Could you sort of like go and specify right now, what is Q1, what is Q2, what is Q3, and what is Q4? Like, give us like live examples.
I can give you examples. But before I do, I will also tell you, Shay, in fact, I have this going on with my business mastermind right now. I gave them an activity log as well as the Eisenhower matrix. The activity log asks every individual to write down what are they doing every single day and also asks them to rank it in terms of importance. So we start to become more mindful of the things we do. And this way we can go back and reflect on it and say, did I need to be doing this? Should I have spent that much time there? That kind of thing. You can't do it unless you have a record. Now you could use an app, you could use a piece of paper, it doesn't really matter, but it's something that you're going to do. And the reason I do that again is because I want people to start thinking about things in advance. And if I condition my mind to say, urgent and important, not urgent, not important. I know that it sounds a little mechanical in a sense, but it becomes pretty quick. We kind of like our brains start to filter things
right,
out.
If you get used to do that every day.
Yeah. Do I need to take this call? Can I call that person back later? Is there any reason I can't be like Brian Tracy would say, setting my email to a quote, do not disturb or autoresponders that I only respond between 11 and 12 and between 4 and 5 in the afternoon, so that I can be focused on other things, because email we know is the biggest distractor of them all, right? Constantly pinging us with all sorts of new responses and our brains want the dopamine. So we're drawn to it, even if the value is typically very low, but occasionally there's that winner.
Not mentioning all those, how do you say, the auto response, you know, the auto stuff that you have here.
The all spam.
Those, yeah. The spam and the messaging sure. and whatever, sure. the WhatsApps and all these things that you have on
right.
the phone.
Right.
Even, it's crazy.
So when you're more mindful, then you could start to be your own policeman, let's call it, and make those determinations.
Right.
Now let's go back to your question. So urgent and important. Again, I mentioned a deadline, for example. Now, think about it like this. Let's say you've got to get a proposal to a client, Isha. All right? Now, if your client asked it from you 2 weeks ago,
yes,
and you had 2 weeks to do it, so that whole time until recently, it was important but not urgent. Now, because you've delayed on it, you haven't provided it, and it's a big proposal and requires a lot of information, figures, whatever it might be, all of a sudden it got escalated to urgent and important because the urgency came in afterwards when it wasn't acted on sooner than later. So you actually can, to a degree, control the quadrant based on your responsiveness to what needs to happen, how proactive you are, all of those things. That said, there are things that will always be urgent and important. You know, God forbid, a safety issue. But if there's something going on in your workspace that's a safety concern, that's got to be dealt with right away, and for the most part, could not be predicted. If, like, use a school example, if the fire department shows up and they're doing a fire drill, right? They don't tell you; it's unannounced.
Right.
They show up, and boom, here you are. Let's get to work.
You got to deal with it.
I drop it. Everything else has to be now the focus, right? If you're in building, you're in real estate, and a supervisor, a city inspector, somebody like this just shows up at your property, I imagine
everything stops.
You or your designees got to show up no matter what, right? Yes. That's urgent and important. Not urgent and important are the strategic things. Thinking about the goals for my business, attending professional development and training courses, participating in masterminds, things that we might do to help ourselves grow, things that we might do to chart a course for our business. Things that we need to do, not today necessarily, but if we don't do them and we keep pushing them off, obviously it's going to ultimately hurt.
Yeah, right. It's also what you're saying now, also the tasks that you have at hand that will become urgent within, let's say, if you have the deadline in 30 days,
yep.
and you have 30 days to do them, and it's doable, it's manageable, correct. You just have to get it done. Obviously, it's there, it's important. Don't get to the urgency part.
Right. Yeah, and think of sales, for example, right? So if I'm selling every day, if I'm showing up, I'm doing my power hours, I'm producing. So there's never, I don't want to say that there isn't a sense of urgency, but it's not urgent like if I don't do it in the next 5 minutes, something bad will happen. But if I've been pushing off my need to sell for a while, or I've been underperforming or sort of wasting my time and drinking my coffee and engaging on Facebook, whatever, instead of doing the calls that need to be made and filling the pipeline. Now, all of a sudden, I'm not meeting my numbers, right? It's like the police officers that are arresting everybody are pulling everyone over the last 2 days of the month in order to meet a quota, right? That all of a sudden you have an increase of urgency because you haven't been meeting that number until that point in time. Quadrant three, and again, quadrant two is where leaders really do want to be operating for most of the time because that's where their impact is greatest. Or we have to get out of the mindset of thinking that we need to be touching everything, controlling everything. That's what prevents us from delegating. But if we want to be successful, we have to be willing to let go, even if the quality and the outcome is not up to our standard fully. We obviously want to get as close as we can, but I'd rather have much more production at 90, 95% than much less production at 100%. Because the numbers just favor that first arrangement. Okay, so quadrant three is urgent but not important. It's returning messages. It's following up on things. It's making sure that deadlines aren't missed. It's a lot of stuff you could be delegating to other people. So for example, in my coaching work, I've got a bunch of VAs that I engage. Some of them are remote. In fact, everybody is remote. I'm a fully virtual workplace, so to speak. I have somebody in Israel. I have somebody in Bangladesh. I have somebody in the Philippines. I have somebody elsewhere. And they're all helping me in different ways with different things that I do. I've delegated them. Now, do I stay involved? Of course. Do I, you know, look things over? Yes, right? You inspect what you expect. So you have to look for the things that you want. And if you don't like it, you have to be able to coach and help train and nurture and all of that. And to use Ken Blanchard over here, so you're probably familiar with leadership and the one-minute manager, the idea that there's this, that people develop, right? So at the very beginning, when you first onboard them, they're high motivation but low skill set. So you've got to train them, but they need a lot of direction. And then as they continue, they need coaching, maybe not as much direction. So coaching becomes more question-oriented rather than telling. Okay, but the motivation tends to drop because people are, they're starting to realize, hey, I don't really know what I'm doing. And we become less motivated. So you need to coach them up. You need to kind of like give them, to say the Hebrew, some chizuk, some strength, some motivation. And then as you move into quadrant three, so you're supporting.
Right.
You're still giving them some support, but you're giving them more space because of the fact that they've learned more. They're getting closer to proficiency. And then finally, when everything is said and done, that's when you truly delegate. Delegate is high motivation and strong skills.
Can I add to that?
So, high competency.
Just one addition to that is that especially in real estate, one of the most important when we talk about commercial real estate, you know, and that's what I talk about most of the time, of course.
Sure.
We put a lot of emphasis on the team and the fact that if you're a leader, you can't do everything on your own. And how do you say, the most part, you're a conductor of an orchestra. You have to have the best violinist, the best drummer, the best. In our case, it's architect. If you're talking about construction, GC, et cetera, you go, it goes on and on. Property management company, or if you are the property management company, you have to build the right team. If it's acquisitions, it's the acquisition guy, the analyst, et cetera. You can't do everything on your own. So I would add to that, the fact that you know to delegate because it's not your job, because you have to put yourself aside and get someone else to do it. Would you say that's another part of quadrant three?
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, Michael Gerber talks about this in the E-Myth, right? The idea of working on your business, not in it. And many people, like, for example, I would imagine whoever's running that company at one point was a GC or something within that food, let's call it business food chain. They were doing the work. And now they're moving from technician to boss, right? So before I was a mechanic, now I've got a mechanic shop. Before I was a baker, now I've got a bakery. So I'm moving up within the industry that I know, but I can't now still do all the work in order to produce the results that we want. So you need somebody who's at the top, who's providing that guidance and that leadership, the one who's coordinating all the individual efforts, whether it's a WhatsApp chat, whether it's regular meetings. In person is very important. Even in the digital age, I think it's critical to try your best to be in person. If you can't be in person, at least over a platform like this with a camera, so you could physically, I mean, you can actually see and sort of have that connection, because we communicate so much through nonverbals, right? It's not just the words that we say. In fact, they say that only 7% of all communication happens with the words that we actually say. Everything else is tone and inflection and body language and all of that stuff. So the more we are connecting with our people, having one-to-ones. I write about this in my blogs. Actually, I have a book coming out, hopefully in the not-too-distant future, that's pulling together all of these productivity pieces that I've been writing about. Daily huddles or morning huddles, one-to-one meetings, a lot of that kind of communication, but then giving your people the freedom to do the actual work. So you're involved where you need to be involved. You know, John Maxwell talked about the 10-80-10 rule, which is the very beginning, the first 10%, very involved. Right? Charting the course, getting clear on strategy. What are the outcomes? What are the metrics? And then the last 10%, making sure that everything was done correctly, reviewing everything well before things get launched, published, announced, completed, whatever that might look like. The 80% in the middle is where people have the space to put the plan into action. And the leader tends to be more hands-off during that phase. It's almost like an airplane pilot, right? When does a pilot earn his stripes? It's a takeoff and a landing. For the most part, when the plane is in the air, outside of some turbulence, they don't need to be that heavily involved. We put on autopilot, we sip our coffee, we have a more relaxing time. But it's a takeoff, and I need to be super locked in, and definitely a landing, but I need to make sure that we come down safely and comfortably for everybody involved, that the pilot really earns that salary, right? That's when everyone will judge them. So the same thing is true for any project. You got to make sure that it takes off efficiently with proper direction. Yes, you'll course correct here or there, but for the most part, if your people are good, they can do the job. And then you want to bring it to a healthy landing so that when it does come back to the client, come back to the customer, they like what they see because you've made sure to be more heavily invested during the times that matter the most.
That's very interesting. Tell me something. I saw this. What's the name of the book? Meaning I saw a picture of the book on your site. And,
this book?
Yes. So it's there. You have a book.
There it is, in the flesh. It's called Becoming the New Boss.
Yes,
the
go
New
ahead.
Leaders. I'm blocking my name here. The New Leader's Guide to Sustained Success. It's actually, I think it's relevant to leaders of all stripes, whether you're new or not. In fact, I had it pre-read by people who are veterans of leadership, for-profit, non-for-profit. I think they felt 90%+ of the content easily is relevant to any leader. It does happen to be a bit of a little bit of a biography too, in the sense that I talk about my own leadership journey, my own leadership challenges, relocating a family, starting anew in a new community, and focusing on a lot of the mistakes that I made, but at the same time, a lot of the wins that came out of being focused on good leadership and taking care of your people. And again, I messed up a lot. At the same time,
everybody
learned
did
from that. And I wouldn't, honestly, I say this so often, I wouldn't be able to do what I do today if I didn't learn so much from what I did then. So sometimes our biggest, and this is, I think, just good inspiration for everybody. Sometimes our biggest setbacks, we make mistakes. Sometimes things are beyond our control, might be market factors, the economy, political matters, whatever that might be. There's a lot of things that affect what we do, especially in construction, right? New regulations, for example. So it may not be our fault, but what we do with the challenges that are presented to us, we often think of who wants a challenge. I mean, nobody would want the struggles that they get, especially people who've had to endure a lot. But anyone who's had to endure a lot, whether personally, professionally, or both, and I can speak from personal experience. My upbringing was not easy. Some elements of my professional journey were definitely not easy. Not easy on me, not easy on my family, not easy on people who were my supporters, but they helped me grow. And the only reason I feel confident right now that I can walk into, whether it's a boardroom or a school building or a conference, and I can share ideas and inspiration and practical solutions, is because I was in that place. And I continue to work with people, so I learn more about their challenges as they go. And that really, I think, is what all of us need to be thinking of. What is my challenge at the moment? How do I best overcome it? And then, regardless of whether it's a challenge or just a project, stop and reflect. And this is a biggie because we're all, like I said before, we're so busy. So we're always thinking about the next project, the next thing I got to do. Well, let's go to my to-do list, right? Stop for a minute. Put on the brakes. Go back to the project you just completed and do a comprehensive review, right? What went well? What didn't go so well? My communication, deadlines, motivation. Did people feel like they were properly supported? Were they given the tools that they needed? Is their efficacy level where it belongs? Are they ready to take on the next one? What are their concerns about the next project, right? So the more we're in tune with our process and our people as we go, the likelier they will be successful moving forward. And of course, we have to provide affirmation as well. People need to be recognized, right? We sort of take it for granted. Well, I'm giving you a salary, so by definition, I'm recognizing you. In today's day and age, in particular, Isha, I think you know this probably even better than me, our people need to be appreciated. They need to be valued. We have so many choices today. If you want your people to stick around and go the extra mile for you when you have a deadline or some other reason that's important to you but may not be important to them, right? What's going to push them to stick with you and to give 110%? The answer is the way you made them feel all the way through. The fact that you had their backs, the fact that they feel valued by you. Because we often think that money is the greatest motivator. But the greatest motivator for the most part is recognition, is feeling valued, feeling
absolutely
that I have a place here. Yeah. And we need to be, as leaders, that's why the people management side is so important. We think if I know my processes, I'm good. But technical skill alone is not enough. We have to be able to balance our technical knowledge and our people skills for real success.
Tell me something. before I ask you the next question, is that book already out or it's still in?
Yeah, it's out, and I'll share the link with you, and you can put it in the show notes. It's available on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com.
Beautiful. Yeah. So we'll be able in the end, which is coming up soon, we'll be able to share the, you know, the links, et cetera, with everybody else.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you something. This is something everybody's curious about. What makes a leader? You deal with leaders. What makes a leader what he is, as opposed to someone who's just not going to be a leader probably ever? What do you think about that?
So, I mean, some leadership is situational and some leadership is attitudinal. Meaning to say, if I'm the boss of a company, then by definition, I'm the leader, whether I want to be or not, right? Because people will ultimately look up to me for decision-making, for permissions, things like that. In some cases, we can become a leader by default. I shouldn't even say that. Default sounds like it's not an intentional outcome. I can become a leader even if I'm in the lowest ranking position in a workflow, for example, just by showing up, by being clear on what needs to happen, by leading up. So a lot of it is a mindset. A lot of it is thinking about how do I show up and be my very best self? And sometimes that's enough, right? I lead by example. I lead by osmosis. Sometimes I have to lead in a more conscious type of way because my organization requires that. So even if you think you're not a leader, I tell this to teachers, for example, all the time. They think, well, the principal's a leader. But no, every teacher's a leader. You're a leader of your students. You're a leader of your peers. You're a leader of other people who come into the school building. And you often lead up as well to the principal or to other administrators. And people in a company can take on a very similar role. It's about what you think yourself to be. Now, I didn't distinguish between leader and manager. I actually do that in the book, and they're not the same. So managers typically are more about pushing the pencils. I shouldn't say that. Pushing forward processes, getting things done. That's a manager, right? A leader is providing a vision. It's more what needs to happen globally, whereas the manager tends to be more in the day-to-day. So they're both important. We need them both. We just need to have different people or the same person at different times fulfilling different roles.
I'll tell you something. I'm reading right now Principles of Ray Dalio. You probably heard about the book. It's an excellent, excellent book, highly recommended. One of the things that fascinates me, and right now I'm reading like I'm at that chapter right now. I got to that point. I didn't finish the book yet. It's about, what do you call it? I'm trying to remember. People are wired. You have to understand. He says, it's a rule. You have to understand. It's one of the principles that people are wired very, very differently. It means that every leader has to understand that you're going to have, let's say, 20 people, 10 people, 3 people. It doesn't matter how many people you are leading or how many people you're managing, whatever the distinction is. You have to understand that none of them are like, they're not similar. They're different people. So going back to what you said about people, it's so important to have them valued. People want to be valued. The money is one thing. It's important. But it's more important because the money is something that is usually decided in the very beginning. There's a contract, there's negotiation. What is your job? What is my job? What am I doing? What is your money? It's done. It's over. Now it's only work. Now it's relationship. Now the question is, how am I going to wake up in the morning and be excited? And it's all about the leader. So I love that part. It's really great. Yeah.
And I would add that it's not just your people that are different and how they need to be led. Leaders themselves are different. And often we need to sort of combine the two together and figure out what works between my personality and my approach and the approach of the people that I lead. So for example, if I'm more solution oriented and I have somebody who in my office needs to have that human connection with constant interaction in that way, I need to do the affirmation stuff, the warm and fuzzy connection stuff before I can jump in and solve problems, even though my own inclination is to cut right over that emotional stuff and get right into the tactical elements of the work. So it's just saying, what does Johnny or Sandy or whomever, what do they need from me for them to be lit up, let's call it, and most content and most engaged?
So important. Naftali, I know you have to go. And This is Thursday today, and I want to tell everybody to have a beautiful weekend, but not before you tell us where to find the book, how to find you and your coaching systems, and to help us and everyone else. Tell us also, you know what, beforehand, you just mentioned before the show that you have somewhat of an intention. You're thinking about it. You want to plan it to have something for people who do real estate. Can you tell us a little bit about that plan?
Sure. So I'll start there and I'll go back to the other piece. I mentioned earlier in the conversation that I run mastermind groups. So very briefly, a mastermind is a professional cohort, a professional network that comes together through a facilitator. And in that facilitated conversation, there's an opportunity for networking, but the primary focus is on problem solving as well as on growth exercises. So the model is universal. This works for school leaders, it works for business owners, and you could really niche down within business as well to specific industries. And so the mastermind involves a hot seat. One person brings a dilemma, people listen, people ask questions, and they ultimately provide ideas and solutions. And there are tremendous breakthroughs that happen in these hot seats every single time I do them, because it's the collective wisdom and people are just so excited to hear what their peers have to say and give them a fresh perspective on something that's been bothering them for a long time. And then the growth exercises, we do time management and productivity, delegation, a lot of soft skills, but also things like marketing and branding and processes and all of that.
Beautiful.
And so what people love to do is collect with people who are very much like them. And so right now, as I mentioned to you before, Yishai, that I'm putting together a group of real estate and construction professionals because they're working in more of a similar space or a lot of concentric circles. And when they have conversation, everybody gets it. And so there's a sense of belonging. And of course, it's a much stronger network. So that's the mastermind. Separate from that, you can go to impactfulcoaching.com. That's my website. Everything I do pretty much is there. Not myself on social media, but practically everything else. I've got my own podcast. I have a blog. All of my offerings can be found there. And then you can find me on social media. You know, just spell my name correctly. And you will find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm on all of the primary platforms. And I certainly love to engage with people.
So Naftali, if you could just repeat for those who are listening, obviously in the audio medium, meaning in the podcast.
Sure.
Again, if you could repeat the URL, meaning your website, impactfulcoaching.com, is that correct?
It's all one word, impactful. So it's impact, F-U-L, coaching, all one word, .com. And then you have a link to the book there also. You can go straight onto Amazon or Barnes & Noble and just
Becoming the new boss.
Becoming the new boss, that's exactly right. And, you know, I think it could just help folks take that next step in their leadership journey.
And for all of you guys,
you're impactful. Everything flows from there.
Beautiful. And for all of you guys who are listening to the podcast, it's Naftali, Naphtali. Again, Naphtali Hoff, Hoff. Hope you guys got it. And you can find him on LinkedIn and enjoy his insightful everything, advice, his experience, and obviously you can sign up for the coaching, as you heard, and check out the links above or below, wherever you are and where you're looking or listening, watching or listening. And with that, Naftali, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate your time. That was great.
Thank you, Yishai. It's been a pleasure.
No problem. You guys have a beautiful weekend. Take care, and I'll see you on Monday. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.